You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome one, welcome all to the greatest show of them all. It is the NFC East mixtape, I believe, volume 98, so too shy of 100 since we created this thing. You can listen to the NFC East mixtape wherever you get your NFC East blog, podcast networks across SB Nation. That is Blogging the Boys for Dallas Cowboys coverage, Bleeding Green Nation for the Super Bowl present, Philadelphia Eagles, Big Blue View for the New York Giants, and of course, Hogs Haven for the Washington Commanders. You can also watch this show on the Bleeding Green Nation YouTube channel or the Blogging the Boys YouTube channel. I am RJ Ochoa from BTB. He is Brandon Lee Gotten from BGN. Brandon, happy Super Bowl week to you and the birds.
RJ, I'm not the best at emoting, if you haven't noticed. Not the most expressive person, but I'm excited. I'm fired up for the Super Bowl. I want it to be Sunday already. I know we have all this lead up and whatever, you know, we cover that as part of our jobs. But honestly, I really just want the game to be here. I'm already ready for the game.
Yeah. See, like, I don't know the like feeling that you or our special guest are kind of used to, because you're like, oh, you know, the media week, I've already done that. Like, I already kind of lived that life when it comes to the Super Bowl. If it were the Cowboys, I don't know that I would sleep. You know what I mean? I'd be kind of like soaking up every minute of it. And I personally am a little bit bored of these two teams just because we've seen so much of them, because they've had so much success over the last few years. Obviously, the Eagles winning the Super Bowl. We'll get to the years thing later, because I have a huge gripe that I want to explain. But if there is fatigue around any team in the NFL, it's not with the Eagles. It is with the Chiefs of Kansas City. And so joining us here today for the first time ever on the NFC East mixtape is the man who covers the Chiefs at SB Nation for Arrowhead Pride. The, I guess, originator of the fraudulent AFC West mixtape. It is from the SB Nation NFL show as well, Pete Sweeney. Pete, welcome to this side of things.
What's up? I've always wanted to be on this show. Glad to finally get the invite.
Do you feel like you're sort of at ground zero for mixtape, you know, creation right now?
I suppose so. We decided to launch a podcast this year. I was very happy. Steven Serta came up with the idea, called the AFC West mixtape. There's never been a podcast about an AFC division. And so we leaned into it, and it's been a success. Bill Williamson, Michael Peterson, Tim Lynch, great guys. The great thing about that podcast, you know, that division, is we have every team represented every show. And so there's never been anything like it.
All right, I guess it's my turn. All right, Pete. Eagles, Chiefs, Super Bowl week. It's here. So much to talk about. So much to get into. I just want to take the temperature, I guess, at the top. How are you feeling? How are you feeling about the Chiefs in general?
Well, this is such a hard game to forecast. Not that, for example, you know, we're talking about division games. Division games always feel a little bit easier because the teams know each other so well, and there's so much to refer back to. But when you get to the Super Bowl, and man, as RJ was saying, and I'm not trying to brag here, I've been able to cover this game. This is my third time in a couple of years, and it's so different.
And how many would you say? I'm just curious for the purposes of the discussion.
Oh no,
three Super Bowls,
and how many years?
Four years. Anyway, I just think when you get to this game, it's just so hard to predict, because we're so, I think, and you guys can probably relate to this, you're so NFC focused all year. I mean, yeah, you have a couple games that the AFC plays the NFC during the season, but you're really looking and studying a lot of the AFC teams. And so it's a little bit foreign to you when all of a sudden, to have your season be a success, you have to end up beating this other really good team you don't know a lot about. Now there's all this crossover with Andy Reid and the Kelsey brothers, and angles and angles and angles, but it's good. I mean, my temperature is heating up. I'm trying not to peak too soon. It is only Tuesday right now, but it's exciting. And I think and trying to take any bias from you or me aside, I think the NFL got the two best teams this year that could possibly get. So hopefully that pans out in a good game on Sunday.
Well, thankfully, I'm here to not be biased at all with regards to this game. Pete, so I'll be honest. I did not think, and we were in Miami together for the Super Bowl that the Chiefs won, and I was not at the time all too impressed with the Niners. Now, my impression of them has obviously grown in stature since then. They've obviously done some impressive things this season. Obviously, I picked them to win the NFC Championship game. That went a weird way, whatever. But that was never really in doubt for me. That just kind of felt inevitable. The next year, I, along with Brandon, we were the only two people actually from SB Nation's experts group to pick the Bucks. Now, I picked them because I wanted it to happen. Brandon picked them as a joke, so I really should only get the credit for that particular game. But I wanted it to happen despite, you know, because I had some Chiefs fatigue. But I thought the Chiefs would win handily. This is maybe the most concerned I've been about the Chiefs in a Super Bowl. Do you share that sentiment? Like, is this the best team they've gone up against in their three?
The Bucks team was pretty good defensively. They were cooking, and they had a lot of weapons on offense, and Gronk and Brady had their thing going again. I think my concern is a little bit less in this one, only because the offensive line is healthy. And I was slightly concerned heading into the Chiefs-Bucks game, and I think we all missed the boat on that. We knew it was a story, but nobody thought it would be the story of the game. And so coming into this one, and I think when you get to this game, and maybe Brandon will disagree with me here, I think experience really matters, you know, for the quarterback play. And just the fact that Mahomes will have an offensive line that isn't the third backup at each position gives me a little bit more confidence. Now you're facing the best pass rush team in the NFL, so I think they're going to have to help them. But I'm slightly less concerned maybe than the Bucks, just because from a health standpoint, the Chiefs are in pretty good shape. They're really only going to be missing wide receiver Mecole Hardman, who's more of a role guy for them.
Yeah, when you talk about the pass rush too, I mean, it's dominant. Historically, yeah. Eagles have sacked, this comes from our good friend Shil Kapadia, Eagles have sacked opposing quarterbacks on 11.5% of their pass plays. It's the highest mark of any defense since at least 2000. And the difference in sack rate between the Eagles at number one this year and the Patriots at number two is the same difference between the Patriots and the number 29 Bengals. So that is insane. Like, that is a huge drop off from just one to two.
Really quickly too, like, the personnel for the Eagles defensively is what Patrick Mahomes tends to have trouble with. Whereas if a team has the personnel where you don't have to blitz and you could rush three or four and have your guys play cover on their pass catchers, those are usually the teams that give Pat the most trouble. Now, not every team has personnel like the Eagles do, which is why the Chiefs win a lot of football games.
Yeah, and to that point, I mean, I said the Eagles have a sacked opposing quarterbacks on 11.5% of their pass plays. It's actually even better when they only rush fewer or four defenders. When you look at that rate, it's 11.8%. So, yes, I guess that's the key question here. That's probably the top matchup of the game. If you're an Eagles fan listening to this, you're wondering, how do the Eagles hope to contain Patrick Mahomes? And as someone who has watched Patrick Mahomes a lot, Pete, there aren't many games where he plays poorly, but, like, is there any kind of through line in those games? Is there anything that's key, I guess, beyond just getting home with four?
I think just when I've seen Mahomes struggle, he does have like a slight tendency to always look for a bigger play. And if you can get him into pressing a little bit, which happens rarely, then that's when he really starts to play poorly. And as I was saying, and building upon the last point, I think teams that give Pat trouble and the Chiefs offense trouble force him to play in the intermediate and tempt him to throw deep into double coverage. He's done a much better job at that this year than he did in previous years. The Chiefs have started to adapt, and I think that naturally happened when you no longer have Tyreek Hill. Marquez Valdes-Scantling came on in the AFC Championship. I don't know how many games you're going to get that Marquez plays that well. It's been few and far between. And so I think you're going to have to live in the center of the field with these intermediate type of passes. And it's just, you know, can the Chiefs be disciplined enough to not throw into what are some good coverage players for the Eagles? It's all about, I think, again, just not blitzing and giving Mahomes a script where he has to nickel and dime his way down the field And Brandon, as you know, that the worrisome part about that against the Eagles is, man, the more plays you run, the better the opportunity for the turnover, which the Eagles have been pretty good at as well. So this should be a pretty good game, I tend to think. And you know, I think on that side of the ball, that's sort of what I'm looking at. And then when the Chiefs are playing defensively, to me, it'll be establishing early that the Eagles are not going to run all over their ass. And I think if they can start to do that, then I think you see a nice back and forth. I think that there's a hidden script to this game where the under is gets hammered in that they have the personnel and game plans to curb the other offense.
Yeah, I could kind of see like maybe being like a really quick game in that sense. But yes. So a point I made, Pete, and this hasn't aged well because Jalen Hurts has been so great. This was said when we had a little bit less of an idea who he was. I was so interested to see the Cowboys up against the Eagles because it felt like Dak was the better quarterback, but the Eagles obviously had the better team. So it was like, what is truly more important, the one of 53 or the 52 of 53, right? Because if you have the one, that can make up for basically everything. And if anybody has the one...
Are we using Dan Orlovsky's rankings or just consensus?
We're definitely using not those. If there is a one, if there's a Neo within the NFL universe, it's Patrick Mahomes. And so, you know, last week, Brandon and I were kind of talking on the mixtape, like potential Super Bowl MVPs. And like, I think we can see a path for a lot of different Eagles players, right? Like I could see a path for like Darius Slay winning MVP or Hassan Reddick, right? Like there are so many players and stars on the Eagles that you could kind of see that happening. You really can't see it on the Chiefs. I mean, outside of Mahomes, obviously, and then maybe Travis Kelce if things broke a certain way. So like, Chris who's Jones. Who's the third person? Like, who's the player? Like, who's the guy or the whatever that we're just not seeing that you know? Maybe it is Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Maybe it's Juju. I mean, like, who? Maybe it's Jerick McKinnon. But like, who is that person that is a story or is a factor that is kind of flying below the surface?
Yeah, I think Brandon muttered it there. It's going to be, if the Chiefs win this game, it'll be one of three players. 90%, it's going to be Patrick Mahomes. And then I think you split the other 5% to Travis Kelce. And shout out to Kyle Barber. If he has another 4-touchdown game like he had after Kyle Barber said that Mark Andrews was the best tight end.
You have never let this go.
Then all of a sudden, if Travis Kelce has a 3 or 4 touchdown game, which he had multiple times this year, then yeah, I think Kelce could win.
Sure.
Same thing on the defensive side. If what I was just saying, the under plays out, like suddenly these high-powered offenses finish in a 17-14 game, you know, that you never expected, and Chris Jones has 2 to 3 sacks, and I think you see a window for that. But more than likely, I mean, I would be stunned if the MVP at the end of this game is not Hurts or Mahomes. The percentage of it has to be for those two guys has to be north of 95%. Like it's going to be one of those two guys.
Going beyond the pass rush, which we already talked about, I guess what concerns you most about the Eagles in this game?
Well, I just think there have been games this year where the Chiefs and one game in particular that I'm thinking of was you got Patrick Mahomes versus Malik Willis in the middle of the year against the Titans. And you're like, Mahomes versus Willis, this is a breeze, right? But Derrick Henry ran 9 carries for 92 yards in the first half. And they ran the clock out of the half, essentially, with the lead. The Titans had the lead with Malik Willis at Arrowhead Stadium. And
GEHA Field, please.
Right, the G, as Susie Colbert likes to call it. Now, I wonder if there is a plan where the Eagles, and it's a different run game, right, than Derrick Henry, just handing it off. I wonder if there's a plan where you see them use the quarterback and the running backs and play that type of game where, let's say the Eagles were to get the ball first, 14 plays, 13 plays, 11 minutes off the clock. The Chiefs get the ball for the first time down 7 with 4 minutes left. And let's say the Eagles defense performs well and manages a 3 or 6 and out. And then they're getting the ball to start of the second quarter with that run game that did what it just did. I think that's the key for me because I think the Chiefs can dictate that early. Like, they want Jalen Hurts to throw the football, right? Like that's what I think you want to see. So establishing that the run defense is going to play well early, and then in the meantime, getting the ball back and scoring. So like, I mean, it's simple. Yeah, you got to score points to win the game. But if the Chiefs can say, all right, you're not going to run on us today, and then come out to like a 10 to 14 point lead, I'm going to be feeling pretty good about the Kansas City's chances. It's just the Eagles, I think, are going to want to establish that type of game early.
Pete, I'll give you a chance to defend this point that Brandon and I brought up last week. There's been a lot of chatter, obviously, about the Eagles haven't played anybody. Brock Purdy injured in the title game. The Giants were kind of frauds, whatever. Easiest strength of schedule, blah, blah, blah. What is the signature win of the Chiefs season? We were genuinely struggling to answer that ourselves. We talked about how, you know, the Eagles flew close to the sun against the Colts. The Chiefs lost to the Colts. I mean, you know, the Chiefs went to overtime against the Texans, right? Like, there's a lot of people who kind of feel like the Chiefs aren't taking the same sort of heat. The answer we kind of landed on, because we also talked about the Malik Willis thing and the struggle, and because that was kind of a game-winning drive sort of situation. We talked about the Niners win, but again, like, that was, you know, that was a little bit different. Kind of hard to really value that. But what is the answer in your opinion?
I just pulled up the schedule. The Chiefs had a
You don't have it memorized. Embarrassing.
The Chiefs had a really soft end of their schedule. I know that they asked for one game, but I would point to three games when they played their best. Against the Bucs and 49ers before their bye. Going into those games, the Bucs and 49ers were getting Eagles-like, this defense is incredible. You can't stop them. And they dropped 40 on both teams going into those games. I know that we thought differently about the Bucs at the end of the year. And then I think there was a game that they flexed to Sunday Night Football on November 20th against the playoff team, Brandon Staley's Chargers. And this was a game that they didn't have Juju Smith-Schuster. And the Chargers ended up taking the lead three different times in this game. And Kansas City just kept going and going and going. And that, to me, it just shows you that, like, you can't count the Chiefs at it. And then for me, too, I think the Chiefs played a much better quarterback in the AFC title. I know you probably don't want that as an answer, but I think if you could design a season and you can slam a button, hey, you're going to have to play a really good defense, but their quarterback is going to be the last pick in the draft. I mean, I think everybody's hammering that magic button. So I don't think that Eagle, if there's one benefit to the Chiefs, as far as like a mystery goes, the Eagles have not played a team like this in the playoffs. And like, I just think there's a scenario where the Eagles could dominate the game if they utilize the run game. I think there's a like smack them in the mouth type of, you know, we're not dealing with the Giants anymore, you know, or what would be Brock Purdy. I mean, this is the MVP of the league. So that plays, I think the Chiefs have like some slightly tougher games along the way. And the Eagles can't control their schedule. You know, it's Brandon's continued point, and I agree with this. It's like, yeah, they had the schedule they had, but they were smacking these teams.
Well, and they earned it. That's the point, Brandon. Like, just like the, I mean, the Chiefs was a little bit more debatable, obviously, with the everything, but like, if you earn the one seed, you earn the one seed.
Yeah, and this is not going to be popular with Brandon, and I'm sorry, Brandon, but I think the Chiefs have already played the best team they're going to play in these playoffs in the Bengals. I think the Bengals would have beaten the Eagles as well.
Bulletin board material, baby.
And he's on Twitter at PG Sween, just for all the Eagles fans to listen.
I think the Eagles are a great team. I just don't think they're better than the Bengals or the Chiefs.
Eagles were 7-1 when they faced playoff teams this season with a league-leading 115-point differential. That's 51 points better than any other team. And the one loss was to the Cowboys, as RJ will remember, with Gardner Minshew starting at quarterback. So, you know, yeah, I think you have to consider
the
that.
The Chiefs and Eagles both have some bad losses on there. I mean, the Colts game was a disaster. But then, you turn to the Commanders thing. So
yeah, I think those games were in a similar veins of like kind of fluky. I remember you were saying, I didn't watch the Colts game, but I know you said like there are a lot of drops and just kind of like weird timing things in there.
It was a lot of special teams gaffes. I don't know how this guy named Matt Amendola continued to get jobs all year, because he was one of the worst professional kickers that I had ever seen. And they ended up going for fake field goals in this game. And, you know, Chris Jones talked to Matt Ryan, which got Matt Ryan to extend the game-winning drive, maybe the last good moment of his career. I mean, fluky for the Chiefs too. And they played pretty well and then only ended up losing to two contenders the rest of the way. So
my last question for you is, you already kind of talked about what the story is if the Chiefs win this game on Monday Football Monday last week on the SB Nation NFL show, in terms of being a dynasty because of, you know, multiple Super Bowls and then just being there and having the success they've had. It's five straight AFC championship games. Let's flip it around the other way. What's the story if they go to five straight AFC championship games? Like Andy Reid once upon a time went 2-4 in Philly and didn't win any Super Bowls. You have
didn't
the
he
one.
To, didn't he play in five straight though?
I guess. I thought it was four. I don't know. Anyway, the point is, like, you know, you make it to the point is the bigger, the larger point here is like, what is the story if they lose this game?
Yeah, I think you're right on it. It's Andy Reid. I mean, regardless of how the game goes, I think the biggest story coming out of it will be what it means for the narrative of Andy Reid, because it's one game, right? And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it really could go either way. I mean, I'm not sitting here telling you I think the Chiefs would win 10 out of 10 times. That'd be ridiculous. Like maybe I'm at 6 or 7, right? So it's possible and it's unfair. But if the Chiefs win this game, Andy Reid begins to be talked about in the realm of Belichick and those types of, you know, is this really one of the best head coaches of all time, if not the best? Because now you have guys that could say, well, he's really been successful with two franchises. Bill can't say that. Like there's things Bill can't say that Andy has accomplished. Now, if he loses, I think a lot of people 10 years from now, 20 years from now, as you tell the story of Andy Reid, he'll be this coach and a lot of people will always counter with, yeah, but you know, he got to those championship games, but could never really get it done. Yeah, they did it the 1 year, but that took a 10-point comeback in the fourth quarter. Like that was kind of miraculous, right? Like
against a coach who's kind of known for collapsing late in games.
And a quarterback who isn't like amazing.
In conference title, yeah. And it's unfair because it's just so hard to get to that point. And like if you really look at even the Brady Super Bowls, right? A couple of the like, you know, a lot of them could have went either way, but they happen to go his way and he's the best quarterback of all time. And no one's going to argue that, but man, the margin was small. And so I don't know how fair that is, but that's the reality. It's a tale of two very different narratives for Andy Reid.
My last question, P, is kind of along these lines, and it sounds stupid to kind of put it this way, but your most infamous line ever on the SB Nation NFL show was that Patrick Mahomes refused to lose.
Yeah. It's never his fault when the team loses.
And so like, even to that point, though, I think it's silly that we're now all of a sudden like only putting the blame. I know you didn't do that, but like only putting the blame for the loss on Andy Reid, or like he's the only person whose legacy is like tarnished by that. If Patrick Mahomes goes to 5 AFC title games and only has one Super Bowl to show for it, that's also on Patrick Mahomes. It isn't just Andy Reid. Like Andy Reid's history in Philly isn't a part of Mahomes' legacy, but I digress from that. And so like to all of that, I do think this is, and I'm curious if you agree, the highest pressure moment in the Mahomes era for the Chiefs. So it's the Super Bowl, right? And so they've played in two of them before. So like, maybe it's the same as that, but like, you know, the stakes are so different. I think the Eagles have much less to lose because they lose the Super Bowl. It's like, whatever, dude. I mean, it sucks, but it's like you won one, you know, 2017, you're in year two of Sirianni. You have all the like hope and future in the world to be like excited about moving forward. Again, you just kind of deal with it and lick your wounds. But if it's the Chiefs, it's like, man, like maybe that we have seen the best. Maybe like they're not even going to get back. Like the Bengals are coming. Yeah. The Bills are going to get it together. The Chargers, because watch out for Kellen Moore. I mean, whatever. But like, when was the last time they had this much hanging over them? Is I guess my question.
Last week, you know, I
was 2 weeks ago. I know you don't understand time.
Like, I think the Chiefs are still the class of the AFC, and Andy Reid is what 64. Mahomes is 27. I just talked about Tom Brady, and we're, you know, in Kansas City, a lot of people hope and that he can have the type of career similar. Brady lost three Super Bowls. If two of those Super Bowls would have happened first instead of amongst them, you would have looked at Brady differently. I don't think Mahomes' legacy is as much on the line as it was against Joe Burrow a couple weeks ago. Because I think in Joe Burrow, before the game, Patrick Mahomes was great against everybody, but he had his Achilles heel that he just couldn't beat. And he was able to overcome that. And I just think there's so much of the Mahomes story to be told. Whereas Andy, more of that story has been told than is ahead. We know that. I don't know how many years it's going to be, but it's 20 years or behind him already, right? Maybe it's 5, 6, whatever. So just it matters more because the time is limited for Andy Reid. I think the bigger loss for Mahomes would have been against Burrow again for the fourth time in like 400 days, allowing them to go to the Super Bowl last year. That was a big monkey off his back. And then not to say that he's not going to be refusing to lose against the Philadelphia Eagles, but I just think the pressure of the quarterback to an extent was more against that AFC foe last week. And like I said, I think, and this is what, again, two very good teams. What tips the scale for me is just that experience of being here before. I think there's a scenario in which this is too high pressure of a moment for Jalen Hurts. Not to say that he has faltered along the way here, but I just think that experience of being in the championship game is important, I think, as the Chiefs go into this.
He is on Twitter at
score prediction.
G Sween.
Need a score prediction out of this. Yeah.
Do I have to give an exact score? I'm still working on it. I kind of have an idea of what I see happening.
You can give us one with the qualifier that it's subject to change. So like we're not going to hold you to it.
This isn't necessarily your final.
Yeah,
I but have we need it. Like we need it, but you can change it.
I like the Chiefs by 10. Okay. I just think that they're going to have
Pete, a good plan. I'm not enjoying this.
my thing is that I've said it five times, but I'll say one more time. I think they'll have a plan for the run game. If they can establish that early in the first quarter, I'm going to feel very good about the Chiefs' chances. My prediction is going to go out the window if they, you know, run 60 yards in the first drive and suddenly the Eagles have the lead. Yeah.
Wow. Chiefs by 10. What's your favorite Rihanna song?
Found Love in a Hopeless Place.
It's called We Found Love is the name of that song. So. He is on Twitter at PG Sweeney, so you can tell him what you think of his Chiefs by 10 score prediction. You can hear him on the SB Nation NFL show with me. He won't be there on Monday. Well, actually, I don't know. You were supposed to answer that Slack message, so we still don't know if you're going
to
be
there. I'll get that to you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Pete. Pete, you have a wonderful day. Can you tell us, actually, last question, who the pre-come up of the week is for the Super Bowl?
Ooh. Shoot. Hopefully not Kenny Gainwell, right? I guess let's go Juju on the big stage. Seems like he's gonna be able to play soon.
I just saw that he has an incentive in his contract that if the Chiefs win, he wins $1 million with as long as he has 50% playing time in the game. So
Juju didn't sign for a lot of money. He was slightly under 1,000 yards this year. If he has a big Super Bowl, It not only, as you would say, we're saying, would get him money instantly, but I think he stands to make a lot of money in the free agency market as well.
So. Pete Sweeney, everybody check out arrowheadpride.com. One love. We found love. He's out of here. Should we take a break and then come back and wrap this whole thing up with some Eagles talk?
Yeah, I have some reactions to what Pete said, but we can get to it after the break.
Okay, we will be right back.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back. While we were gone, Brandon, you went and looked through your Rihanna discography collection, and you have a suggestion for your favorite Rihanna song.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously Umbrella. you know, a classic.
I was going to say Please Don't Stop the Music. So I'm glad we at least had three different answers here. Can I go first with reactions to Pete? Because like this is the Eagles side of the conversation. But I think you will find my reactions interesting.
Okay.
Obviously rooting for the Chiefs. And I have like a bit of a like closing debatable statement I want to get off, you know, before we leave here. So I'm obviously rooting for the Chiefs. Not a fan of anything Pete said. Like that's some bad vibes, super scary vibes. That is like counting the, I feel like the chickens are being counted and they haven't hatched yet. Now I will give the Chiefs, like I understand. I know people like clap back at this idea. I understand if you, whoever you are, have some fatigue about the Chiefs, right? Like that's natural, right? Like it's boring and dated. You've seen it a million times. Like we've heard all these stories, like the Kelce Bowl stuff is fun and a cool twist, Andy Reid, whatever. But like, I get it. If you have some Mahomes fatigue, I am all for like, you know, rolling out the red carpet a little bit further if they win this game, especially the way Pete said, right? Like if you go in there and you shut down this Eagles team that nobody's been able to shut down all season long, by all means, we'll line up and we'll sing your praises. But to act like it's a, and I know he's not like proclaiming anything, but like to act like it's like reasonably within the realm of possibility is a bit of an assumption I wouldn't make personally. And so some bad vibes. I do not want to see the reality that I think is going to unfold based on what Pete said.
On Juju, because Juju was brought up there, I think there's some bad Juju going on for the Chiefs because he was asked on Super Bowl opening night about cheesesteaks or something to the effect
of,
the best cheesesteaks don't even feel like, he was very clearly a troll attempt, but it was a very like not unique and bad troll attempt because then he was asked, well, where are better ones? And he's like, I don't know, definitely not in Philly. Like it was just like lame. And I think
is that a thing? Like, do Pittsburgh people do that? Because I mean, that would make some sense then. I mean, just to try to understand the genesis of this.
No, I don't. I think it just speaks to Juju kind of being viewed as maybe immature at times, okay, and not like the most, maybe an unserious, that's the best way to put it, unserious kind of player. Just didn't think that was good vibes. There's some other things that aren't even necessarily directly related to the Chiefs, but all this 49ers whining that is still going on. You have Brandon Ayuk coming out here saying the Eagles got extremely lucky. Like all of that is only working in the Eagles' favor to me. Like, that's only like making them stronger because it's just like, we can't even get respect after we blew this team out in the championship game. But I think the biggest thing I wanted to respond to about Pete, you brought up the refuse to lose line from.
Should we explain that? Like, just so in case anyone hasn't heard, this was the 2020 season. That was Herbert's rookie year, right? And it was actually the game, the Tyrod Taylor injection game, when the injection went wrong and Herbert had to jump in and start. And I don't remember what the score situation was, but it was a lot tighter, obviously, than anybody anticipated, especially, you know, with the quarterback situation unfolding the way it did. And the Chiefs came back and won. And I believe they converted a 3rd and 20. And I think Mahomes even like scrambled for the first down, if that is correct. And the next Monday, Michael Kist, shout out to BGN Radio, obviously, and I were talking about it. And Pete said, you know, this guy just refuses to lose. And I love Pete, but he said that in all seriousness. Like that there was no Juju troll attempt there. It was like completely and totally serious.
No, he believes
it. Kist and I equally rolled our eyes because we were like, dude, come on. Like it was just whatever. The Chargers collapsed. But just so everyone has full context. I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt. This is your show, but I just wanted the information to be there.
Well, I think there's something to that about Jalen Hurts. When it comes to the Nick Sirianni comparing him to Michael Jordan, I think that's what he's getting at. It's something that it's hard to talk about because it sounds very like, yeah, wouldn't any player in theory like refuse to lose because they all want to win, duh. But I think it's at a different level, and I think it's how it manifests. I think with Mahomes, it's different in that he's just so talented. Like he can just do crazy, insane things that no one else can do. I think with Hurts, there's just this belief. I think you see it in the team. And I think the team has taken on that personality of feeling like I always talk about how Hurts is so composed. And this is why I'll push back on Pete saying, like, you know, worrying about like the moment. The moment's not too big for Jalen Hurts. That's like the least of my concerns, or lack of experience. I mean, I think you can argue the Chiefs are actually suffer from lack of experience in the terms of, especially like you look at their secondary, a lot of rookies and young players playing out there, especially going up against Devontae Smith and AJ Brown. But Hurts might be young, But like, I don't worry about any kind of, you know, moment being too big for him by any means. I think that's, you know, that's something he has covered. He is super composed, and I think the whole team has taken on that vibe. I think they're loose. I don't see any concerns about this team being uptight. I will say, as a zooming out a bit here, I don't feel as confident as I felt in the Eagles winning the Super Bowl in 2017. There was just like literally no doubt in my mind after they beat the Vikings in the championship game. I was flying out to Minnesota that week. I wrote an article on the plane, like talking about how they were going to win. Like I was rereading that article recently, and I was saying, I felt like I looked into a crystal ball and I saw the outcome of the, like, that's just the confidence I had. And I don't think it was cocky. I just, like, that's legitimately how I felt. I feel a little bit different this time. I'm not worried about the Eagles losing. I just think it's going to be a situation where it's a close game and someone's going to make a play at the end. It could be either team. I just think it's going to be kind of a coin flip game is how I feel about it. I'm going to pick the Eagles to win because I believe in Hurts at the end of the day and that composure and everything they have going on. But the Chiefs are really good too. Mahomes is really good. So it's just, I think it's a coin flip game.
This to me is like, we talk about seeing a path a lot. And I mentioned that to Pete, but like I think we could have seen a path to the Bengals winning the Super Bowl a year ago, right? Or we could have seen a path certainly to the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl 2 years ago, right? Or even a path to the Niners winning. They were up by 10, you know, winning the Super Bowl 3 years ago. This is the like closest I feel like the two paths are, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're almost like on the same path. Like, the deviation off of like the center line is like 1% for each team. They're that closely intertwined. And so like, this is why we don't have to like, whoever loses this game, make this dramatic, you know, leap, because it is such a close thing. Like, the margin, Pete, I love that point about Tom Brady. Like, the Super Bowls he won, like the Malcolm Butler pick, that was a super tight sort of thing at the very end. They overcame 20-3, right? And, you know, even though the one they beat the Rams in the second time was like not that great of a game, it took that big Gronk play at the very end. But you could just as easily, you know, play that game the other way. I don't think people give Brady that benefit. I mean, if not for the David Tyree catch, right? Like, if not for, if Asante Samuel catches that interception, right? Like, and if, you know, if the Hail Mary works against the Giants the second time, like, you could play the what if game a lot of ways, obviously. And so we don't have to make that huge conclusion. I agree with a lot of what you said, and it bums me out to do so. You know, when I started to like really worry this week about the Eagles winning, because obviously I don't want to see that happen. You mentioned Super Bowl media night. The way the Eagles players walked in, super chill. Like they looked bored. Like they looked like, you know, and like whatever. I don't have a problem with people enjoying it. Like, it's a Super Bowl. You should experience it. Like, you shouldn't be like, I don't want to enjoy it or have fun because we might lose. Like, you don't know if you'll get back. Like, it's very, very difficult to do. But they looked super, super, super bored. I'm surprised. I'm not here to troll. Like, that's not my thing. Like, the Eagles are a great team. I'm super fine admitting it. But I'm surprised we haven't heard like, well, Jalen Hurts got pulled in the national championship. I really thought we'd get that kind of like take this week, and the week is still young. But so maybe like it's not like he has no experience. Like, I recognize that's not the Super Bowl, but like, the dude has played in some massive college football moments, huge, and some massive NFL games. So, you know, whatever. I recognize Mahomes has obviously played in some big games. I don't know. It's so hard to get a read on the Chiefs, because like, I think that The Eagles, to me, generally, like, this is the disposition of Philly as a whole, tries to like underdog it up. And so it is strange when you're not the underdog, right? I remember after the Seahawks won the NFC title game against McCarthy's Packers, the crazy comeback, I don't know if it was Jermaine Kearse or Doug Baldwin was like screaming into the camera. They were like, y'all doubted us. It was like, you were the one seed at home. Like, you know, like, what are you talking about? Like,
I mean, Belichick did that with the Patriots all the time. Like, that's that's one of the things I want to give him credit for. He always had kudos. That mentality. Yeah.
All I'm saying is, like, it does sound silly on paper to be like,
100%.
For either of these two teams to be like, everybody's doubting us. Like, what are you talking about? Like,
paper last week, Eagles felt slighted because George Kittle said on paper, the Eagles defense is good on paper, which I thought was a really tame, I don't even think he was taking a shot. Maybe like very subtle, very slight, but the Eagles used it as fuel. And I think that's a credit to Sirianni. Hey, Julian Love out here in Good Morning Football criticizing Nick Sirianni, saying he's just along for the ride and anyone could coach that team to a Super Bowl. I mean, I think one of the great things that Sirianni has done is fostered this culture of, hey, we are the underdogs. We're being disrespected. We're not getting that proper respect. And is it silly? Maybe. Yeah, but I think it's working for them. It's like what you say about the getting all these people to to believe the sky is orange,
get,
right?
And yeah, if you get 53 players to believe the sky is orange, then it is orange. And so, yeah, I'm with you. And I've given Sirianni his credit for that. I know a lot of people think it's silly or whatever, but if it works, right? Like if it has a tangible effect, then who cares, right? Like if you win the Super Bowl, who cares? Like nobody will care if you win the Super Bowl. And so
but that's another reason, real quick, that why like I'm more confident in the Eagles. Like, why is Julian Love coming out and saying that? What does he have to gain? Why is Brandon Ayuk coming out and saying that? It's just, you're just giving them this team that you hate more fuel. Like, don't do that.
As if I really try to remove my obvious bias against the Eagles, so like I'm really doing my best here. I think that football fans feel cheated. Not that like the Eagles are cheating or anything, but I feel like people, like, it's so kind of boring to not see like this great team get tested, right? And so like you can argue that, like we talked about how it felt like we were robbed of a great game in the NFC title game, whatever. And like that's just the schedule. So I think that like that's like a deep psychological thing for people, is they feel cheated or robbed or whatever, that like this Eagles team hasn't really been pushed. And like we've talked about the Cowboys game, like, yeah, they were pushed in that game and they lost, but it wasn't Jalen. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't feel like we've really seen them push to their brink. And I think people want to see that. If that happens and they win, I think people will really celebrate them.
So we can all admit, right, that if the Eagles do beat Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, we can't say that anymore, right? Is that, or is it only, well, they only had the one good game? Like can I'm we gonna admit say that if they win this game, that there's nothing fluky about it and they actually deserve respect?
I'm going to say two things that I really wish weren't true, but they have to be true if the Eagles win this game. One, what you just said is true. But two, if the Eagles win this game, like, you can, any Super Bowl win is sweet, right? Like, you know, nobody cares like how you won the Super Bowl. If you win it, cool. But like, if the Eagles win the Super Bowl and you're an Eagles fan, like, and if you're like a conscious Eagles fan, right? Like, obviously there are little kids that are Eagles fans that won't remember this or whatever. Believe me, I know that life. But like, this is the two best Super Bowl wins you could possibly have. Yeah. I don't know of a way to like dream one up that would be greater. Like
Brady,
it would have been cool. It would have been cooler. Mahomes, the full story was cool, but it would have been cooler to not have to deal with the like drama afterwards. I think that's fair to say. Like, that was probably annoying, but still, like, the further and further we get away from it, I just saw before we started recording that Nick Foles wants to retire an Eagle, right? Like, mm-hmm. So that is cool for the obvious reasons. So if you knock off Brady and you knock off the dude that everybody says is Brady and the dude who's only been knocked off by Brady, you know what I mean? Like, it's really sweet.
Lovie Smith and Rex Grossman. Sure. Yeah.
I mean, that, yeah, if you're talking about, you know, Peyton, fine, we can call Peyton great. Like, we don't have to, you know, pick up.
Well, I'm just saying, like, if you're going to talk about like the contrast, that's what it is.
Right. And so, and I've said this before too, if the Eagles win, if we just look at this season, this is the, like, you know, people say this expression a lot, like, oh, it was like a Madden game, right? Like, the quarterback threw for 300 yards, the running back ran for 100, the receivers got 100 yards each. This is like a Madden season. This is like a franchise season and you're like running the Eagles, right? Like, everybody's an all pro, everybody's a pro bowler, everybody set records, you know what I mean? Like, and then they won the Super Bowl. Like, nobody will, like, people can say whatever they want. Like, and that's my, I said I wanted to have like a closing statement. I'm not saying we have to end, but like, my whole perspective here, I hope the Eagles lose with all of me. But if they win, they're a great team. They are a great team no matter what. But if they win, like, and you're an Eagles fan, like, rub it in everyone's face. Like, rub it in my face. Like, you deserve it. Like, it is such a sweet season. And if you get the cherry on top, like, I mean, dude, like, what more could you ask? I mean, and the Sirianni stuff is whatever, but the dude embodied the culture that you, not you, Brandon, but like, you say you're proud of and you say is representative of your city and your people and everything. And in its own way, that is cool. And so, like, he made everybody hate you. Like, and if you're the kind of Philly fan that relishes in that, like, this was as Philly of a season as it could possibly be.
Yeah, I think the last thing I'll say here is that, you know, I've said before, season's kind of a failure if they don't win the Super Bowl. It's maybe I need to parse that a bit more. It's a wasted opportunity, obviously, 100%. Sure. But I don't think it's a failure from the standpoint of it was still an incredibly enjoyable year. A lot of likable, rootable players on the team.
Bright future about, too.
And Jalen Hurts is 24. He's going to be here for the future. You know, a lot of things will change. You can't just take for granted that this window is going to stay open forever. The Eagles' last Super Bowl run is an example of that. but at the same time, just because that happened doesn't mean it will necessarily again. And I think there is more staying power with this quarterback. To your point about Super Bowl opening night and the confidence that you saw in the team, how about just the talent? Like, look at all the players, the stars on the podiums that the Eagles had versus, like, you have George Karlaftis, Benjamin Solak made this point on the Philly Special podcast. Come on. Like, he's like he's one of the players at their podium. He's like a rookie defensive end. Like, nice player. I like George Karlaftis. I think he's a nice player. But you have like that as one of your top representatives.
Versus Hassan Reddick, right.
AJ Brown and Hassan Reddick and Brandon Graham and Devon and like just, you know, all these like stars on this roster, which is no surprise. We talked about how loaded the Eagles are many points throughout the year and leading up into this game about quarterback versus roster kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, this is like a team you can be proud of, right? Like, this is a team that like you're very proud of. They historic season in terms of sacks, in terms of wins. You're feeling good about a lot of things, not guaranteed to happen again, but there's reason to believe, especially in an NFC conference that does not have a much of apparent power players with staying power in terms of like, you know, oh, these are the clear behemoths of the conference, much like the AFC does by contrast, then yeah, you feel good about that. What's your prediction for this game, or do you want to make that later?
In a little bit. I just have a few more like kind of things I want to tidy up here. On the Hassan Reddick point, I still believe Micah Parsons is a better player. Not here to like, you know, sing that song and dance, but he's an amazing player.
Wasn't that far player. Off.
I don't want to call it an annoyance, and it has nothing to do with Hassan, but like, and I've given Howie Roseman an enormous amount of credit. In fact, I'm the true Howie stan on this show, at least. If we want to give Howie, we should give Howie credit for the AJ Brown trade, by all means. Like, Howie, and I was wrong. I read my apology letter, et cetera, et cetera. I think we need to stop giving Howie credit for the Hassan Reddick thing. Like, you yourself have talked about, like, it wasn't a big deal. Hang on, just hear me out. There's no way Howie saw this. There's no way Howie saw this. That's what I'm saying. Like, Hassan deserves the credit for this. Like, you know what I'm saying?
He deserves a lot of credit, but I think more than one thing can be true.
It's fine. Multiple things can be true. All I'm saying is, like, I get Howie.
It was a really good bet to make.
This is not a criticism by any means. I'm saying I don't think Hassan individually gets enough credit for his season. You know, and I know you've been high on him, but like, Howie clearly saw something with AJ Brown, right? Which is why he was willing to send the compensation that he was, and he gave him the deal that he did. And I'm not saying like, oh, he thought Hassan was a loser or anything like that, but like, it was a bet, right? It was more of a gamble, and he hit. So like, certainly credit to Howie, but like, huge credit to Hassan for like cashing in when a lot of people didn't really believe in him. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he didn't get the deal that you would think he did based on his performance. That's all I'm saying. Like, I think Hassan Reddick deserves the bulk of the credit for his season and for what he's done, as opposed to like other circumstances like Darius Slay or AJ Brown or James Bradbury. I think you get my point.
I think it's important to give credit to the players like you're doing there. I think a lot of people tend to kind of fall into a trap of when they talk about Jordan Mailata, who's had a lot of success coming from literally never playing football at any level to being, you know, like a very high quality left tackle in the NFL. And a lot of people want to be like, Jeff Stoutland, you know, made him. And it's like, yes, I definitely want to give the Eagles offensive line coach, who's clearly very good and just signed an extension, credit. But you have to give Jordan Mailata a lot of credit too, because
right.
He put a lot of like the hard work in to become that player.
That's my point.
So I get that. But I again, from a bet standpoint, I love the bet, because you're just looking at his production that he had, his age, the fact that he was so misused and didn't even play a ton early in his career. Like, you made a logical bet. And for the money, he's not even a top 15 paid edge player. That's insane. He's 19 and a half sacks in 19 games. Like, that is correct. You don't, like, those kind of players don't even become available, first of all, on the market. And then second of all, when they do, you have to pay like out the wazoo for that.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, if we had lined up odds on them turning in like these kinds of seasons, like for Hassan, they would have been like 100-1 versus like for AJ, they would have been like, I don't know, like 20-1. You get what I'm saying? Like, and kudos to Howie for making that bet. All I'm saying is the odds were what they were, you know? And so like, good for him. Like, he got this great season for like not a great cost. And like, there's more than enough credit to go around. And so I want to say, I've come to realization, but like, I'm ready to say something that I think I've known for a while, but I would say about 5 years ago, I still argued a little bit, but like, I haven't argued it, you know, vigorously. That Jason Kelce is obviously the best, you know, offensive lineman, you know, whatever.
Blah, blah, blah. The most overrated.
Well, so there was a little bit of like name value to that I do think serves with other players, not him, like when it comes to Pro Bowls and stuff like that. So that was kind of where I was coming from. And obviously I thought very highly of Travis Frederick. So like, looking, you know, within the division, it was a really interesting conversation for a while. There's no question that Jason Kelce is the superior player. This is my take. Jason Kelce is the best Eagles player that I have seen in my lifetime. Like, nobody else has been as great of a player for the Eagles specifically as Jason Kelce has in my lifetime. That's where I'm willing to come down. Like, I think that highly of him. And I am so annoyed at how funny and likable he is. Like, it is so frustrating that his podcast is awesome. Like, there's just everything. Like, it's just the most frustrating thing in the world. I really cannot stand that. But he is the best Eagles player in my lifetime.
He's like Mr. Eagle, right? In your eyes. Yeah,
if I was in charge of like constructing an Eagles Mount Rushmore, he would be like the center figure for players that have played in my lifetime. Again, like, I'm not diminishing the past. I'm just talking about, you know, whatever, 21st century, a little bit before that.
It's pretty crazy too, because there was a time leading into the 2017 season where it was like, you know, they might get rid of him. They might trade him, might cut him to save salary. And he's really had, I don't want to call it a late career surgeons, because I think he was good earlier and probably didn't get the proper attention because he was a sixth round pick. And I think you see with offensive linemen, it's kind of, they always have to shed that. Like, if you're a first round pick, you just get more benefit of the doubt, because, you know, let's be real, there's not like offensive line stats that you have, so like your reputation matters a lot more than it does at other positions. But I mean, we're talking about a guy who's five-time all pro, six-time Pro Bowl. He has a chance here to win his second Super Bowl ring. This is like first ballot Hall of Famer type stuff. Like, this is special. And here's the thing, RJ, like, he might retire in theory after this season, because he's playing his age 35 year right now. The Eagles have Cam Jurgens, who he was very much on board drafting, but like, he's not really showing signs of slowing down. Like, he feels like he could play for at least like one more season, if not a couple, and play at this kind of in crazy high level. Like, this is, yeah, he's incredible. So good job by you.
We talk a lot about luck, right? Like, what relative to games and seasons, right? Like, and like earning your own luck, like with regards to the one seed and stuff like that. And like, this isn't a fault by any means, but Jason Kelce is really lucky, I think, to have like had the like career dominance he had specifically in this Eagles run, right? Like if it had happened even like, if you want to call it this, like, I don't know, 6-7 year run, if that had happened from day one in his career, you know what I'm saying? Like, it wouldn't have lined up as greatly as it has. It wouldn't have worked out with the talent around him and everything kind of coming together. And so like, sometimes that happens to players, right? Like, and sometimes players are on the wrong end of that, right? Like, you know, how many, Pete loves to compare Mahomes to Michael Jordan, even though Sirianni does it with Jalen Hurts. Like, how many players were unlucky to have like career dominance in the same era, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's fortunate for him that he's been as great as he has been in this moment in time for this particular, like, he is a legend as far as like, it, and there are different teams and places and sports, whatever, where like, if you're a legend, if you're a great player, you live forever. And like, Jason Kelce, I think, is one of those dudes with regards to the Eagles.
Yeah, and Brandon Graham too. You know, it's a little bit different in terms of BG doesn't have the all pros, but I mean, he's almost more of Mr. Eagle to me, just from a standpoint of it. He doesn't have to be, he's a very good player, but it doesn't have to be just star player. It's not always that obvious. Sometimes it can be just a player who's been around for so long and is such a good dude off the field. I mean, him and Kelce are kind of hand in hand in that regard. And Nick Sirianni always credits having both of those guys is why he felt like he was able to have success, or at least have confidence coming into this coaching opportunity. Because it wasn't like he was just taking over this totally young roster with no leadership. Like, he really leaned on Brandon Graham and Jason Kelce. So I think those are kind of pillars of this Eagles era, specifically under Sirianni, in addition to what they've done in the past. And they're huge, hugely important to the team. Are you ready to make your Super Bowl pick?
I want to say one last thing before I do, because I tweeted about this. And you agree with off. Me. No. You agree with me. The Eagles are playing in their second Super Bowl in 6 years. How is this complicated to people? I don't understand this. I know you agree with me. You agreed with me on the show last week.
I year doesn't mean anything to me in football, because it's not a real thing. They play in multiple years. It is a real year.
Like, if you call it seasons or years or Super Bowls,
they're seasons. That's what they call them. We call them seasons. But
even if you go by years,
that's what we call them. Literally what we call them.
But it is still six. Like, if you call it years, if you call it seasons, if you call it Super Bowls, it is a set of six, no matter what you're talking about. That's my point.
If the Eagles won the Super Bowl, like they did, let's say, on February 4th, 2018, and then let's say they won the next Super Bowl the next year. So they won
two Super Bowls in 1 year? You would not say they won two Super Bowls in a year. Like, you would not say that. Like, no.
No one would say that.
Nope. I mean, no, they might... No, but it wouldn't even be true. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, nobody would say that, because it wouldn't be true or correct. Would you say, Brandon, that the Cowboys in the 90s won three Super Bowls in 3 years? Because the first one was the 92 season.
The time frame of that.
They won three out of four. Would you ever refer to that as three Super Bowls in 3 years?
No.
They won in 1992, 1993, and 1995.
All right. I
My problem with this is the people who are like, oh no, it happened on February 4th, 2018. You're not counting that. Like you're just taking that one day. Like you're not actually counting that year, that season, right, that Super Bowl.
Make your prediction.
I am picking the Chiefs to win. I'm not going to like
10 points.
I really, no, I'm not that bullish. 31-30.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I want, think that's what it's going to be.
I really want that. Like I want something awesome. Like, I want something fun. I do kind of feel like the playoffs as a whole have been kind of lackluster. What was the best game this playoff season? Like, maybe the AFC title game? But speaking personally, the Cowboys ruined the AFC title game for me, because right after the Eagles won the NFC title, that was when they moved on from Kellen Moore. So I spent half of the AFC title game doing crap with that. So I really want to just like see an epic game. That's what I want. But I'll take the Chiefs to win, like I said, 31-30. Now, you're going to make your pick a lot, obviously, in a lot of different places. You're picking the Eagles to win. So if you want to change your score, by all means. So give us a score.
I'm not ready to say a score. But
okay. Then don't give us a score, but give us something that you believe will happen. Not that's a part of our same game parlay, because Brandon and I will do that with Steven Serta on Friday on the look ahead on the SB Nation NFL show. But something, it can be silly, it can be mundane, it can be big, it can be important, it can be epic, iconic, whatever you want. Something that will happen besides the Eagles winning.
It just feels very hard to believe that we've seen, like, it feels like AJ Brown's due. He had these quieter games against these 3-for-22 against the Giants. I forget what he had against the 49ers, but it wasn't much. He's going to get in the end zone. And if not, he's going to have a big day. Like, this Chiefs defense is, like, Jarius Sneed is a good player. He's a nice player. At the end of the day, though, I just feel like, you know, AJ Brown's also really, really good, and he's too good for him to have this quiet of a playoff. So I think he's going to go off in this game. I think he's going to have a big game. Almost maybe he's being slept on a little bit just because he's been quiet recently. It's like, oh yeah, he's really good. We forgot about that. So I think he's going to have a big game.
I don't want the Eagles in the Super Bowl, as mentioned, but like, it would make sense if they want it for AJ to have had a big season. Like, that was the big, yep, like, if there was a poster for like the moves, so to speak, that Howie made, it would be AJ Brown, right? Like, no disrespect to James Bradbury or anything. You know what I mean? Like, Jordan Davis, like all these other things were big and important. Hassan Reddick, but like the big, you know, sort of meaty thing that he did was trading for AJ Brown, and that paid off over and over and over and over again. So it would just be symbolic or parallel or whatever for him to have a big game.
And he hasn't been far off. Like, the past two games, I've mentioned this before, and it's a concern with Hurts going into the Super Bowl. We'll see how he's doing with his downfield passing, because he hasn't been great since coming back from the injury. But he's been open on two deep shots, and Hurts just hasn't hit him. So he's been getting open. Like, that's not the issue. It's not like he's been struggling. It's just it hasn't materialized yet, and I feel like it's due to happen. So I'm leaning Eagles. I think it's gonna be a really close game. I think the Eagles are gonna find a way to pull it out again, because my core tenet belief just goes back to Hurts, like, refusing to lose the game. He's just so locked in.
Is Hurts what is Hurts doing to the game? He's refusing to lose. Interesting.
It's the battle of the two quarterbacks who refuse to lose. The first Super Bowl like that.
I was right on something I said to Pete on Monday Football Monday. This is the first playoff game that Patrick Mahomes is playing and wearing his white jersey. So along those lines,
jersey, I have red pants.
Right. I have a question for you. So I've actually seen Seamus writing and doing stories about this. Like, I guess it's like impossible to get a green Eagles jersey, like with the Super Bowl patch on it right now.
I did not see. I saw he wrote that story. With all due respect, Seamus, I did not open that story because I'm working on things. I haven't had the chance to do it yet.
Sure.
But I've seen that going around, yes.
So this is a different take of mine. And if you get it as a gift, it's a different set of rules. But if you have the option, if you're, say you're an Eagles fan and you're getting a jersey with the Super Bowl patch, the white one doesn't make any sense to me. Like, again, if you have the option. I understand that there are limited quantities and things like that. But, like, if you're getting the jersey with the Super Bowl 57 patch and you're an Eagles fan, you have to get the green one, because that's the one they're wearing in the game. The white one makes no sense.
Barring, maybe you don't have the money for it or whatever, or it's a gift. Yeah, whatever.
Assuming all things are equal. That's what I'm saying. Like, equal opportunity, equal cost, whatever. Mm-hmm. You ever notice the Chiefs have a lot of patches? Like, Patrick Mahomes has a lot of patches.
Mahomes.
I don't know why they have the AFC patch. Have you ever, like, what is the deal? Like,
I don't know.
Why do we need this? So we've got AFC, we've got Captain's Patch. Now we've got
the Super Bowl. How do you feel about the turtlenecks that they always rock in the pictures? you know, like the pictures of the players, the profiles, like the headshots, they always have the, you've never noticed that? They're like the only team that does that. They always have the white turtleneck in the pictures where everyone else is just, you know, normal, not.
To your point, it's not like like a modern, you know, like Under Armour, Nike, you know, thing. It's like a cotton.
Like a Christmas sweater.
Yeah, like it's like a, like, is it a mock? Right? That's what it's called. Like, it's like a, it's a vintage looking thing. I kind of like that. Like, I like some of the, there's not a lot of teams that have super traditionally things like that.
Yeah.
Like, I like how the Packers have like a seamstress that, you know, does things. Like, it's not like, you know, like stuff like that's cool to me. And I like how traditional the Chiefs are. I will say this. I really try my best not to troll. If the Chiefs win, I will absolutely tweet that Dallas beat the Eagles in the Super Bowl because they used to be the Dallas Texans. So that will be the one trolly thing
that's,
I do.
It's really, I mean, that's very pathetic, but okay.
I mean, I'm fine.
I want to talk about the rest of the division, RJ, quickly, because you know, not as important as the Super Bowl. It is, there is a lot of, I will say, I will rub it in the faces of the non-Eagles fans here and be like, all these other things going on that aren't the season still. It's just very unserious. I'm like, who cares? This is like stupid. Like, oh, offensive coordinator shirts. Like,
let's rip through this. So we talked, Kellen Moore is gone, obviously, last week. We talked about Dan Quinn staying. Brian Schottenheimer is the new offensive coordinator for the Cowboys. It was a promotion. This is the general take. Like, there's not a rational Cowboys fan who has any other sort of take. I don't want to like disrespect Brian Schottenheimer, but it doesn't really matter. Like, this is it was always going to be somebody who was close and like McCarthy. That's who it is. In this case, obviously, they worked together in Green Bay. In case you did not know, Brian's father, Marty Schottenheimer, gave McCarthy his first ever NFL job with the Chiefs, incidentally. And so it was always going to be a pro McCarthy guy because he's going to call the plays. And I said last week,
it didn't have to be.
I mean,
I said on the record before this even hire was made, I said, I think the Cowboys should get creative here because it's there. I know they're going to get, you know, go with familiarity, someone in the building or someone that knows Mike McCarthy. And this is a nice opportunity, especially because why fire Kellen Moore then? Like, Schottenheimer is so much, and the upgrade from going from Kellen Moore to the combination of McCarthy calling the plays / Schottenheimer attached, that's so much better than Kellen Moore. Like, that's making worlds difference. I don't get that.
I mean, again, I'm not gonna make a change. Well, I'm answering the question, like, why it was done. It was because they had to make a move. Like, they had to do something. There had to be a fall guy for everything. Like, so that, like, it had to be Kellen Moore. Like, of all the available options, it had to be. I mean, like, you can laugh and snicker, but like, that's the truth. And again, it was always going to be a Brian Schottenheimer archetype, like somebody that was just a pro McCarthy guy. Like, we can sit here and say, like, well, this would have been better. Like, they're all in on McCarthy. And like, I don't mean all in, like, we like, and I'm not saying they don't believe in him, but it's not like, oh, baby, like, we know this is the path, we're all in. It's like, look, like, we have enough invested here, like, whatever, like, it makes sense for us to line our chips up in this direction and hope it pays off. I mean, they're pot committed at this point. So they're just doubling down.
I feel like Cowboys fans should feel like the team could have done better. They could have been a little bit more creative. They didn't have to just bring in someone that McCarthy knew. They could have gotten someone here who could bring some fresh new ideas to the table. That seems like a unique opportunity to do so if you're getting rid of Kellen Moore, as opposed to just someone who's going to be in lockstep with the play calling head coach at this point, especially considering Schottenheimer's resume, right? Like, this isn't has had such great success. And like, oh, this is so inspiring. You look at his track record. I'm sure you've seen the Roger Sherman tweet, formerly of SB Nation, Roger Shermer at Roger on Twitter, who has like the breakdown of like 28th ranked offense when he was the Washington quarterback coach. And then when he was in San Diego, the only year of Drew Brees' career where he didn't look like a Hall of Famer, and then so on and so forth. Just a big resume of not being impressive, including the Cowboys playoff win over the Seahawks, where the Seahawks stubbornly refused to throw the ball at all for some reason and had to get the ball to Mike Davis and Chris Carson a bunch of times, even though it wasn't working clearly, and had success whenever they did actually throw the ball. Like, it just feels like they could have done better. That's how I feel about it. Like, I'm looking at this move. I mean, I'm like, great.
I'm not going to sit here and tell you, how are you not respecting the hire? But like, it makes sense with what they're lined up to do. Like, and so, and they needed somebody who had a heavier emphasis on running the ball and like to install the offense in that sense.
Absolutely mean Zeke and Pollard are both coming back, by the way.
See, like, you're just doing the like silly low hanging fruit thing when there's
that.
Like
I believe that wholeheartedly.
That would be wrong. Like because okay. like again, they want somebody to install the offense and to like develop the run game during the week. And Mike McCarthy is going to focus on the passing game. Like that's his thing. Like, and so obviously he trusts Brian Schottenheimer to install the offense and set things up. And so it makes sense. I'm not going to sit here and like bet on that, but it does make sense based on the variables and circumstances that they have in this particular moment. I have no idea what they're going to do in the running game, but like
back. You know it.
There are enough people that are super closely related to the organization that are floating out the idea that he's gone. And I've said this before, like, I don't want to like sit here and root for anybody to be cut or fired or whatever. Like, it's not a comfortable thing, but I will be impressed with McCarthy if Zeke is gone. Like that will mean he won. I'm legitimately
it's gonna be a pay cut.
I'm legitimately unsure on Tony Pollard. I don't know. The injury is such a factor now. It's so hard to figure out what the best thing is. The Michael Gallup situation a year ago is really fresh. He had knee surgery a week ago on the other knee, not the one he tore his ACL from a year ago. So, I mean, it's a really scary proposition to just pay him and assume everything's going to work out. I don't think everything's on the table, like equally on the table. I don't think there's any like likelihood or anything. If I had to predict, just a pure prediction, I would predict that Zeke is gone. And honestly, they let Pollard walk and pick up a comp pick. But I don't think like the Bijan Robinson stuff is such a low hanging fruit. Like we don't have to do this thing. But I mean, it will be some combination of lower level free agent Malik Davis and maybe a day three pick.
I think the smart play would be to cut Zeke, not bring him back at a discounted rate. That is dumb. I'm not saying you're saying that, but I feel like I can only envision Zeke taking a pay cut and some Cowboys supporters being like, oh, this is a great move. We get Zeke back and he has a lower rate. No, you need to cut clean, make a clean cut, break free, be done with that. And with Pollard, there should be a world where he's brought back, but it's you let him test the market and then you see what's out there. And there's a chance because of his injury and the uncertainty that you could bring him back maybe on a one-year deal that's less than you expect. Something that works out for both sides. But basically the point is there, like you have to slow play that one. Don't try to, you know, tag them or beat the market to the punch. Don't do that. Just let them sit out there. And if you lose them, you have to live with that, but don't close the door on signing him. If the number makes sense.
I just want to say this for you and for other Eagles fans. There are fans of every like creed and belief, right? Like, so there are definitely Cowboys fans who are like, no, you got to bring Zeke back. The majority of people share your sentiment. Like, just so we're clear, like, you don't have to tell me, like, I've seen Cowboys fans saying this. Like, of course, you can find me a Cowboys fan that says, like, Romo should still be the starting quarterback. By the way, interesting how the heat has come for him now as of late. But I was
never on board. Of course, let's go to the Giants, where they might lose Mike Kafka, who's still in the running, I believe, named a finalist for that Arizona Cardinals job. So that'd be kind of, like, disruptive, you know? I mean, that would kind of be, like, a bummer. Not to say they're screwed because they lose him, but to lose him after one season and like Daniel Jones finally kind of turning this corner and things looking like promising for a little bit, and to lose him after one season, I feel like that would kind of be a big bummer.
I don't know that I think it would be a big bummer. I mean, they have Brian.
It would. Like,
they
have ruining your continuity.
I mean, again, like, I'm not saying the like bum scale is like 0%, but like your bummer scale, like, but it would not be like if I had to like assign it a value on the like spectrum, like 0 to 100%, I think it's lower than 50. I mean, it could be like relative to context, like relative to the fact that they have Brian Daboll, like they've been in the wilderness for so long. You know what I'm saying? So like they've been in the wilderness, they're out of the wilderness, they're eating a warm meal, they have a blanket draped around their shoulders, and you're walking up to them and you're like, oh dude, like somebody took the shoelaces off of your shoe. You're like, oh, that sucks. But like, you know,
I think it's like taking the shoes off, not good. Just the shoelaces.
Okay, cool. You got to walk back up to the castle. I don't know if you're going to get the Harry Potter game. I'm pumped about it. That's what I was thinking about when I brought up the forest. But yeah, maybe not barefoot. Like, you got socks on. You know what I mean? Like, you're not completely barefoot. So it could be much worse.
So that's what's going on with the Giants, really. The big things are like, are they going to re-sign Saquon? What are they going to do with Daniel Jones? I mean, Daniel Jones is going to be back. It's just a matter of what's the deal look like. And then we'll see what they do with Saquon. Washington? Not a lot going on. Still looking for an offensive coordinator, right? But there hasn't even been a lot of buzz on that. And that's it.
That's it, man. There's nothing going on there. generally chill times in the division. It's just, it's the Eagles show right now. That's
who's really their quarterback going to be? Because I have seen that at Hogshaven. The Hogshaven, at least from what I can tell, very set on no more retreads. Like, no
I don't,
more retreads.
Yeah, I don't think they're getting Derek Carr. Like, I don't think they're in the mix for one of these, like, kind of top level moves. I think it's somebody.
There's literally an article that says no more retreads at quarterback for Washington with 282 comments. And there's a poll here, RJ, which I'll get to, but say what you want to say.
I mean, I think it's some sort of free agent signing, like contingent upon who is ultimately available, but like somebody off the open market, if that winds up being Jimmy Garoppolo or Jameis Winston or Mitchell Trubisky, like I think it's something like that. Like it's some sort of open market signing paired with a draft pick with an eye towards the future.
Might not be the worst idea for them. I don't know who they can realistically hire or draw away. I was going to say, ideally, this is what I would do if I were them. Probably not going to be able to get away with it. But if I were them, I'd try to hire Eagles passing game coordinator Kevin Petullo, who is like Nick Sirianni's boy, because you're getting that Colts connection. And then I would try to maybe sign Jacoby Brissett to compete with Sam Howell to push him, because Brissett is known for being a very good like culture locker room guy, and you need that, I think, in that situation. He's not going to carry them by any means, but you kind of just have a stability there that if the floor falls out with Sam Howell and he ends up, he totally just stinks and isn't any good at all, then at least you have something to fall back on. Not that, you're not making a ton of long-term progress with that. I will say this poll at Hogshaven, RJ, 72% of the voters with about 3,000 votes cast want to roll with Sam Howell through thick and thin. The second most popular option is sign a modest veteran and let Howell and the veteran battle
I think
it out.
That's fine. Like, I mean, this might be the last year of the Rivera era, the Rivera. So like the last thing you want to do is like, you know, stick your new head coach with, in year two of like a quarterback he may not love. So I agree. I just saw right now, as you were talking, a report from SNY, from Connor Hughes, that Daniel Jones's price tag is believed to be between $35 and $37 million a year. It's a lot of money.
It's not, I think it's really not relative to the quarterback market, but
no, that's why like people that are like Dak's making $40 million a year. If Daniel Jones is making $35 or $37 million a year and Dak's making $40 million a year, like sign me up for this reality. Like that's an incredible bargain. Like
there's really no bargains at quarterback for the most part.
I mean, it's a bargain relative. It becomes a bargain like as soon as the next deal is signed. That's the way
I mean. Yes, relatively, but in terms of like a bigger scale, no. It's either like quarterbacks are usually paid nothing at all, relatively, like the rookies, or a ton. And it's various amounts of a ton. And there's a unique time where someone does become a bargain, like Jared Goff. Jared Goff right now is a bargain because you're producing like very high level offensive numbers with a guy who I forget where he ranks exactly. But because of the Lions trading for him too and not owing him that guaranteed money, and because of how long ago he signed that deal, like that's a legitimate bargain for the production
Geno
you're
Smith,
getting out of that
another player. Example.
But here's the thing with those guys. That doesn't last. Like I guarantee you Jared Goff is going to get some kind of like extra incentive or more guarantees thrown onto his deal because there's like a respect thing with that. And these agents of these quarterbacks aren't going to just allow the teams to get away with like having a super crazy bargain. There's going to be something done to rectify that. It won't be he becomes the highest paid quarterback, but you're not going to get away with like an absolute steal like that. You're just not. So
agreed.
Yeah, they're going to have to pay
Jalen outside of the player being on their rookie contract, which by the way, we'll obviously talk about Jalen Hurts and everything. We've got big time players in the NFC East eligible for new deals this offseason. Jalen Hurts leads the way. CeeDee Lamb, Trayvon Diggs. I guess
a lot of different Eagles free agents who are going to be up for.
Well, I meant like grads. Rookies, but yeah, like new deals, obviously as well. So yeah, or not rookie contracts. But Jalen Hurts and CeeDee Lamb and Trayvon probably the biggest, like again, because they're coming off their rookie ones and stuff. So, okay. The very last thing I wanted to say, I have slowly over the last few years been watching Seinfeld all the way through. I think I've told you this at a certain point.
Same.
Well, I'm wearing the shirt. I have one episode left. The finale, and I'm going to watch it tonight, and we're recording this on Tuesday, so when this episode is out I will have finally seen all of Seinfeld. Jamie,
congratulations. See, you have time to do things like that. I don't, because I'm actually covering a team in the Super Bowl.
I made all these jokes. I gave all the props. I don't know why this is necessary. Like, I tried to be very kind and very.
I mean, you
know,
it's not even a joke. Like, that's true. I wish I could watch Seinfeld this week. I'll get to it next week after the Eagles win.
Seinfeld, new Harry Potter game. Super Bowl. I'm living large.
Parade. So.
Let's get out of here, Brandon. tell us your favorite thing about the Eagles, and then we leave.
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot, because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast-closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle, it's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.